Welcome to the Endurance Town USA Project. This podcast, along with our blogs and adventure team, travel around the world creating and sharing the stories of humans changing lives through endurance sports. Today, we're excited to introduce a new mini-series, Running Across America, featuring the stories of four diverse American transcontinental runners, all motivated for different reasons to run across the United States of America. We will explore the who, when, what, and why of their stories and help listeners inspire a spark deep within themselves to go discover what is possible. This is Endurance Town USA.
Bring it back. Good morning, Samantha Pruitt, Endurance Town USA here, back on our mini-series about the humans running across America. And today we have a special guest. Sandy is in the house, and my co-host, Shan Riggs.
Hey, Shan, over here.
All right. Sandy, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing great. Awesome. I'm excited to be here. Yeah.
So first, what we want to do is allow our listeners to understand a little bit about you, Sandy, who you are as a person before we dig into your endurance lifestyle and specifically your run across the United States of America. So do you mind telling us a little bit about who you are, your backstory, maybe where you grew up, what your lifestyle looked like when you were growing up, and a little bit about who you are as a human?
Yeah, so nothing really interesting. I mean, I think it's a misconception that maybe I was an athlete growing up, which I really didn't get into running until I was already, you know, in my mid to late 30s. Kind of grew up in California. This is, that was where I was from. I was born in a small town called Bakersfield, and we kind of moved around a lot. My dad was in retail. So nothing super interesting there, but that is kind of where I grew up. I have two younger sisters, one who's, we've got 9 years between us, and the other one who's about 15 years between us. So,
wow.
big age gaps. But my sisters were always the athletes. They played softball and, things like that. And I was kind of the musical, read a book, draw a picture kind of nerd. Anything I could do to get out of sports and PE and things like that. Don't throw it at me because I probably won't catch it. And don't ask me to run anywhere because it's probably not going to happen. So, it was just total non-athletic person. So I guess I didn't really get interested in that until I was, you know, much older and a parent myself at that time. So not a whole lot to tell.
So you grew up in the Valley of California.
I did. Mm-hmm. Bakersfield, and then
agriculture.
We moved to Fresno and Sacramento, and into high school in Stockton. And then I went to the University of Pacific for a year, and I studied music. So music was always my passion.
Music as in writing or playing or both?
Both.
Ooh, what'd you play?
Yeah. Saxophone, piano, flute.
Saxophone? That's cool.
Yes. It was. It was pretty cool. Like I said, I was kind of a geeky nerdy person at the time, and you know, things kind of changed, and yeah, I never actually finished you know, at the university as other things came up, and I ended up getting married at a young age.
And you have a daughter, or you have multiple children?
I have one daughter. She's 27 now. Yeah, and I have two grandkids. So my grandson's 3 and my granddaughter's 16 months now.
Awesome. And you somehow moved your way to Florida.
I did. We moved here actually just a few months ago.
Oh, so that's recent.
It's very recent. And my husband's actually from here. And so we decided to just make the move and come back east. And it's been really great for everybody. So my daughter actually lives in the next town over with the kids. So it's nice to have them all here.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. So another pandemic move, a lot of movers and shakers during the pandemic.
Yeah. And it wasn't because of that. We had been talking about leaving anyway, just for a more, you know, peaceful, quieter, you know, more enhanced quality of life, if you will. So a little slower pace, easygoing. My husband likes to call it island life, island time. So it's always 5 o'clock here. So
it's always happy hour in Florida. Doesn't matter what time of day it is.
It doesn't matter what time of day it is. So
that's cool. So weren't doing sports or anything, sounds, all the way through college.
No.
All the way into adulthood. Always.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. No kind of exercise. I think I tried to join a gym once when I was like in college, my first year that I was there, and do like aerobics and like an hour type workout, which was like class led, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I did do that for a little bit, but yeah, I didn't like really get interested till later on. And I actually taught spin class and some aerobic classes for several years, actually 8 to 10 years, I think is how long I did it later on. Okay. But that was after I started going to the gym and I started wanting to run. Basically it was a plan to, and a journey to become more fit and lose weight just to be healthy. It wasn't like I was trying to do anything amazing. I didn't even really know anything about, I was very naive. I didn't know anything about the distances of the runs, like what a marathon was or a half marathon. It was just going to the gym, running on the treadmill for an hour just to start losing weight.
How old and were then you I started, at this point? What was, do you remember?
Like 30, 35, okay. 34, around there. Yeah, this was, yeah, way later. Okay. Way later. And then I started seeing some of these other cool things like the cycling. So I got involved in that. And that's how I started teaching spin class. And that was kind of going on at the same time when I decided I was going to run a half marathon for the first time. So.
And you remember
and that's
that
when it,
first
that's
time?
When it all happened.
Do you remember that?
That's
first
when
time
it all
when
happened.
You walked in the gym. I totally can remember still to this day. I'm a late bloomer too. I didn't hit the gym until almost 30 and same thing, lose weight, get healthy, all that stuff. And do you remember that first time you walked into the gym? Oh my gosh, just awful.
Yeah.
You know, you needed to be there. Right. But you're like, oh,
right. And I hated running. This? I mean, I hated running and there's actually a childhood story I've told several people about my first experience running. I was probably like 7 or 8 and it still sticks in my mind, but it was basically my father taking me out on a jog. You know, it was like something that was, you know, popular back in the 70s, and it was horrific for me. I just remember like I couldn't breathe, my lungs were on fire, and it felt like we were gone forever. And I'm sure we just went like around the block or something very short like that. So, you know, I just, whenever I saw the treadmill and I just thought, oh my God, it's time to, you know, let your lungs catch on fire. You know, I hated it, but I knew it would be a good way to start losing weight. Because running is a great, you know, great sport for that. Mm-hmm.
So you got into sort of the gym life with spin classes, treadmill, exercise classes, and just you were looking for lifestyle fitness.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It was, and then pretty much was it.
Mm-hmm. You got fired up because you became a teacher. So somehow you went from, I'm going to suck it up and do this class to now you're instructing the class.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good leap. How'd that happen?
Yeah. I just became very intrigued by the whole thing. And of course, as you start to do something, you might find that you're good at it and it just becomes easier. And, you know, you start sitting in the front of the class instead of the back of the class. And the teacher's like, oh, you're great. You should, you know, think about, you know, taking the courses to teach, you know, teach a class too. And that's kind of what was the trigger for me. I was like, oh, I could do this too. So, you know, like my side hustle.
What did it look like community wise for you then? You were doing, is that what you were doing for a living?
No, that was like my side job. I worked for Walgreens for several years, almost 28 years to be exact. And I retired from them before we moved out here. But so I had a, you know, pretty much a 9 to 6 type job most days. And then I would do this 3 times a week after work.
For fun.
For fun. It was for fun. For fun. Everybody needs a side hustle, right?
So, of course. So yeah. Then you discovered running wasn't horrible. Your lungs did not catch on fire. Your legs did not fall off. And you signed up for a half marathon?
I did. So as the running progressed, it's like, okay, this isn't so bad. And I'm actually enjoying it. And before I knew it, like my time on there would fly by. It's been an hour and okay, I'm feeling pretty good. And so I'd seen this advertisement in the locker room for a half marathon. That was actually the San Jose Silicon half, Dean Karnazes Half Valley
Half
Marathon. Yeah. And so at the time I didn't know who that was and I didn't really know what a half marathon was, but I thought it would be something, you know, challenging to do. Cause you know, after I figured out half marathon was 13 miles on, that's really far. That's really far. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I went ahead and signed up for it. And so from that point I started digging and I'm like, well, who is this person? And I researched him and then realized, oh my God, like there's a sport actually past a marathon called an ultra marathon. Like, what is that? And so the more that I just kind of learned and researched, every time I would tap on something, I would learn something new. And then that's how I figured out what Badwater was and just all these really cool, amazing things. And so that's when I got, you know, I think really into it and just totally knew that I was going to do Badwater one day.
Well, Dean is on Team USA. He's here with us in quarantine. So we'll tell him this story because he will love that. So you went from, I'm doing a half marathon. You had a great experience, so much that you decided to discover and start delving into ultra running. How many years was this transition from I've walked into the gym and my lungs are on fire to I have found running? Yeah.
And I'm really maybe like a year or two.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe 2 years. I did a lot of, after I did that first half marathon, I was very I just wanted to keep doing as many as I could. And I would find different ones and I would sign up and I would just do them like as many as I could, because it was just like something that I started loving to do. And then I upped it to the marathon distance. And as soon as I could find marathons, I would start signing up for those. And then I think it was 2014 when I decided I was going to start getting ready to be able to apply for Badwater. Mind you, I hadn't even run like 50 miles yet. I was already just focused on, I'm going to run 135 miles in the desert, you know, record heat, and, you know, knowing that only 100 athletes in the world get into that race. Like that was the goal. So then I started doing marathons and I started doing 50Ks that I could sign up for. So I just kept upping my distance. And then it was 2014 when I signed up for my first 51 miler, which was a Badwater Cape Fear.
Oh, okay.
And so I guess, yeah.
So where does this drive come from, or this thirst for challenge? Where is it coming from, or where did it come from at that time in your life?
I think it was I think it was intriguing to see what I was capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And then the more that I was committed to, and I think it's with anything that you, once you're committed to something, you start to see this progression and you start to see this result. And then there starts to be a hunger and a thirst for like, what else can I do? What else can I do? How much farther can I go? How much more efficient can I be doing this? So I think it was just how far can I push myself? What is the absolute limit of what I can do? So I think that's really what the thirst was. And then just to be a good role model for my daughter, you know, to show her that, you know, you can do anything that you want to do. You know, somebody as ordinary as me, you know, thinking that, you know, I want to go run Badwater, and I hadn't even run, you know, a 30 miler, you know, yet, or let alone a 100 miler, to do the things you need to do to even apply for a race like that.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Shan was looking a little bit at your running resume, and you've got quite some... Quite some depth of experience there. Shan, you want to ask her a few questions about that?
First off, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you?
Okay. Well, nice to talk to you. Well, actually, I was curious kind of so you got into racing, looked like started to get a little bit competitive. When did the whole idea of trying to run across the United States come up?
It kind of came up in the midst of trying to, you know, still get my, you know, my name into the hat to run for Badwater. I was actually watching another athlete, Pete Kostelnik, who I didn't know at the time. And, you know, he's actually a really good friend of mine now, but at the time I didn't know who he was. And so it just the same, you know, you never know who's watching you and who you're inspiring. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just amazed because he was getting ready to embark on this journey. So I was like following the journey and I was just like, oh my God, like that's so cool. Like that's crazy. Like who can do that? So
yeah.
Thinking all these crazy things, but then I'm like, I wonder if I could do that. No, I want to do that too. I can totally do that. So that's kind of where the little seed got planted in my head. And I just became, you know, like the next big goal. Like I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
So that totally running across America goal was before Badwater, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, it was before. Yeah.
I had those reversed in my head. And Shan left us for just a brief moment because we are in quarantine. So we're all getting COVID tested today. And when they knock on your door, you have to answer. So he'll be back. But
gotcha.
Sorry, Shan. So you decided and set the goal to run across America, even though the longest you'd ever run was at that point a marathon. Is that correct? Or no, you said a 50 miler.
No.
You had done a 50.
Yeah, I had done 50 milers. I'd probably done 100 miler because I was getting ready. You have to run 300 milers in the calendar year to be able to apply. So I think I had already run 100, but I hadn't like actually submitted an application or applied or anything like that.
Okay. Okay. What was your first 100 miler? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. It was, it was in Daytona. It was a Daytona 100. So it was a road race actually here in Florida. And at the time I'd never been here before. So I didn't know anything about humidity and I'd never run in this climate at all. So when I came out, you know, when I first arrived here, it was like walking out and the doors open, it's just this big, thick cloud of like wet air. I can't breathe.
Exactly.
Like, I can't breathe. How am I going to run here?
You'd rather run in your belly.
Another story, but the comparisons between dry heat and this stuff out here is way worse. But so that I remember this was my first time experiencing that. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot.
So you had your sights on bad water. So you were working your way towards it, getting your races accomplished so you could apply. But in the meantime, you got distracted by this. Could I run across America? And of course I could, and I should. And you started, you let the planning begin.
Yeah. And I don't think much planning really happened. I mean, that was me saying I was going to do it. And, you know, a lot of people can say, you know, I want to do this. And it's, you know, you have dreams and things you want to do, but it didn't really actually come into like, okay, now I'm actually, you know, have people supporting this and this is what's going to actually happen probably for like another year.
Okay.
So, I mean, in my head, I knew I wanted to do it. And so I was running all the races and all the miles that I could, you know, because I thought at the time that's what I needed to do to get ready to do something like that. Mm-hmm.
Did you find that the training, now in hindsight, looking back, did you find that most of the training that you needed was mental or physical?
I think it's mental for sure. I mean, your body will physically, you know, can do a lot of the things that you ask of it. It's this up here that is the blocker. Because once you get focused on something, you know, this hurts or that hurts or whatever, something's wrong. It just becomes like the trigger and the focus that you, you know, your brain tells you want to stop and your body's, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, I've come to learn that it's all mental, you know.
Agreed. Shan, you're back. Do you want to continue asking your questions? Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know if you shared with the audience. Yes. I had to run out for a few minutes for a quick COVID test. I'm back. I just have that tickle in the nose when they give you. So sorry, I missed some of those questions, but I'm not sure if you brought this up, Sam and Sandy, but so you ended up with your run doing a record run. I think it was 54 days, and it was a record that stood for a long time. When you were conceiving the whole idea of running across America, first off, why in the first place try to do something that big? And then second, were you going for the record from the beginning? And also why for that?
I think initially I didn't think anything about a record. It was just like a really huge, you know, challenging task at hand just to run across America. And then I came to, you know, think later on when I realized what the woman's record was, that it was something that I think was, you know, appealing to me. So it became about, you know, let's go for the record. You know, I might as well try and go for the record if I'm going to go all, you know, if I'm going to do this. Let's do that. So, it wasn't the initial plan, but then it became like, you know, something I wanted to go for and do. and break that, you know, 30-year-old record.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And so on day one, you were starting from the steps there in San Francisco, right? And from were you starting off at record pace, or how did you decide how far to go each day, and did that change over time?
It did. You know, I had a lot of people advising me, and I refer to them as like the elders, and, you know, people like, you know, Pete and Marshall and Ulrich were like, you know, had given me a lot of advice. And with something like this, I mean, you don't want to go out and do like, you know, too many miles right away, because your body does need to kind of acclimate to it. So initially the first week was, you know, the plan was to do, you know, between 50 to 55, just to kind of acclimate a little bit. And then to gradually start to increase the miles. And, you know, the first, you know, I think 3 or 4 weeks had a lot of, I went through 11 mountain climbs that I had to go through, and ranging anywhere from 8 to 12,000 feet that I had to get over. So, you know, to be able to get 50, 55 miles through the climbing, you know, was a pretty solid plan. And then once you get back into the flatness of going through, you know, the middle of the states, you know, was when I was able to, you know, do 60 to, you know, 64 miles a day. So that was kind of, there was a lot of variances in the plan. You know, we made adjustments as needed, but it was pretty conservative in the beginning.
Yeah, that's interesting. When 2 marathons a day is conservative.
Yeah. Well, initially, you know, at the start of any run, you feel so, you know, energized, and you initially, like, I wanted to keep going. I remember on the first day, like, I wanted to do, you know, more, but more is not always better. So, you know, I played it safe and listened to, you know, the advice that I was given, and it was good advice. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't quite that ambitious, but I did talk to Marshall and Pete ahead of time and got similar advice, and I'm glad I took it. And
right.
Try myself. What time of year did you do it?
So it was September. So it was like in the fall. Yeah. It was September of 2017.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good time of year to do it. So you're going through the desert in California, you're going through Nevada desert when it's not, maybe not quite as hot, or at least cooling down a little bit before you get to Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually, and it's, you know, the weather, well, I was hoping it was going to be a certain way, but it wasn't. So the desert was still really hot. I even had to go through, I saw every weather imaginable, blizzards, like, I went through snow in Colorado, and we actually had to do an extra, you know, instead of 2 runs a day, because I would do one in the morning and take, you know, break, and then do another one after lunch. But having to do a third run on this one particular day because there was a storm coming in, and there was fear that we would get stuck in near Rabbit Ears Pass in Colorado and wouldn't be able to get over, you know, this mountain. And, you know, I could have lost a day or two. So I had to go out and do like another 20 miles. I think that day I did like 70 miles just to make sure we pushed ahead. And we had to, you know, I didn't really want to go and do another run. It was one of those days I was done. I'm pretty sure Cinder was pushing me out of the RV. I don't want to go, you know, in the snow with my snow cleats. And it was really, really cold. And yeah, it was all uphill.
It always seems all uphill.
Right.
So what was it a day for you? Like, what was a typical day? And did you have typical days? Did you have like a pretty, you know, did you try to stick to a schedule every day, or was each day going by?
No, we had a pretty regimented schedule. It was pretty routine, like clockwork. On my feet for, you know, 12 to 14 hours and then off. So I'd get up in the morning, I would have breakfast, I'd get dressed, lit up like a Christmas tree, and out the door, right, with my chase car and my support guy. And we would do, you know, usually I would do 30 to 32-ish miles, maybe 34, depending on where the RV could stop for me to take my lunch break, which I would get back in, have lunch, get stretched, and then go back out and, you know, do it again. And then the RV would drive up ahead, and then I would, you know, basically run to the RV. So in my mind, it was always like 2 runs a day. Right. And the goal was always to get to the RV. So.
Right. Just break it down into chunks you could manage.
Yes.
Right? And that was just get to the RV.
Yes.
How far ahead was the RV? Was it 3 miles, 10 miles? something else?
She would. Well, no, I never saw her until it was lunchtime. So it was just me and the chase vehicle. So once I got up and I left, he supported me from the car, you know, with whatever I needed. And that was the system. And she would drive ahead because she had so many things. There was only two people. So it was Cinder in the RV and then my guy in the car, you know, following me. And that was it. So she, you know, had shopping and laundry and she was doing fundraising. And like, so she had a ton of things to do. So, you know, she would go ahead and find a place, you know, plan the meals. And, you know, I would see her at lunch and then I would see her at dinner and then we would all go to sleep and get up and do it again the next day. So that was
so you pretty lived much out how that RV. Went. The RV was your
pretty home. Much. It was. Yeah. It was. It That's was. Cool. And then when you're like in a bubble like that for so long, I mean, you know, I didn't have contact with anybody and that was, you know, for good reason, just so I could stay focused on the one task at hand, which was to run. You know, I didn't talk to my family. I didn't, you know, have any kind of contact with what was going on in the world. So I'm like in this little bubble. So when we would come to like big cities, it was like overwhelming for me. Cause you know, most of the time we're like on, you know, these roads and, you know, places where there's not a big, you know, big city, but when we had to cross through big cities, it was like, oh my God, it's so like busy here. Can we hurry up and get out? That's crazy.
So this was 2017. So there was, you know, some Facebook and other social media and probably have phones that would get reception, but you're saying you were pretty much unplugged. You weren't connecting to people that way or checking emails and nothing like that.
Yeah. Nope. That's why you were able to run so fast because you didn't distract yourself for all the crazy.
Yeah. I think that's super smart running. So yeah. So no contact. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And what were you eating and drinking?
Oh my God, what wasn't I eating and drinking? I ate. I mean, that was my second job was to run and the other one was to eat, you know? So, I mean, I had three meals a day with a meal. I mean, and like, for example, like breakfast could be, it was usually some kind of oatmeal or cream of wheat, toast, a Coke, cause you know, things with calories. Normally I'm a coffee drinker, but you know, I only ate things with like dense calories. Otherwise it would just take up space in my stomach. So I didn't really have any more vegetables or anything like that during that whole time that I was, everything was pretty, you know, calorie heavy, high protein, high fat, high carbs and everything. And with every meal I had a big shake. So three big shakes, three big meals. Plus I was eating all day long up until the time I fell asleep. And then I would wake up and still eat because we'd keep food on the side of the bed because, you know, you're starving. All your body's just like a furnace. You know, especially by like the third or fourth week. So it's like, what wasn't I eating? So like toward the end, I was so tired of chewing. You know, we'd put mashed potatoes in a bag and cut the end, you know, like when you're frosting a cake and it would be like, just squeeze it into my mouth because I didn't want to chew anything anymore. It was just exhausting.
Yeah. I remember getting towards the end and feeling like I never wanted to eat again. I'd eaten enough for years. Were you able to maintain weight or did you lose weight even though you're eating so much?
No, I was actually, I don't think I lost any weight. I'm sure that I probably looked leaner and I had more muscle, but like my weight was pretty much the same when I came home.
And the people we've talked to, especially people that are going for the record, that seems to be an important feature to not get behind in calories, because otherwise things start to fall apart and people get injured pretty quickly. Did you deal with any injuries?
I had about a tendonitis, which is typical. That usually happens to me in any endurance activity that I'm doing that's longer than 2 days. But it was manageable and it actually healed on its own during the run with, you know, massage and tape and ice and that type of stuff. I think when we went through the cold in Colorado, I mean, that I think helped to loosen it up and help it go away. But it was, you know, an injury that was manageable. There was a couple of days where I had to walk my miles, but I walked them every day. So I'm a very good walker. I've learned how to walk. Yeah, I can walk pretty fast. So.
Did you run into any surprises out there, anything that you didn't see coming that was a bit challenge?
No, I mean, I think it was a challenge every day. I mean, sometimes it was just, you know, just like I was talking about, or the mental, you know, after a while it's like, you know, you don't want to, you know, I don't want to be on this road anymore, you know, this hurts, that hurts, you know, it's just just the whole idea of like, what am I doing? There's like, you can't see an end, you know, there's never a finish line, you know, not in something like that. So you're like at the very end. So it, sometimes it felt like I was running into nothingness and it was just, you know, overwhelming. And then when we were going through, I think it was Ohio, it was raining really bad. And so like, I just kept getting splashed and getting, this is why I hate running in the rain now and I won't do it. Like it was just, I felt demoralized and defeated. Like, it just kept, they kept splashing these trucks. And I was just like, I mean, yeah, it was horrific. So I think dealing with some of the weather and just that type of stuff was challenging. And feeling like there was never an ending point was challenging.
Yeah. Let's dig into some of the mental game a little bit. So for listeners who have never done anything this outrageous or this challenging with their physical bodies and their mental, emotional minds, what are some of the tools that you utilize during this race? And Badwater, we'll touch on that too, but you know, that are just part of your everyday toolbox in terms of building a strong emotional mind?
I think it's just for me, focusing on my own, what I'm doing at that time in the day, like small goals, instead of looking at the bigger picture.
Okay.
Is more manageable and easy to stay focused. If you're not focused, then, you know, that's when things start spiraling out of control. But if you're focused on these small goals at hand, then it's easier to, you know, move forward, you know, through the day. At least that's what it came to be. So like, even in my mindset now, you know, I focus on what I can do and I focus on me. I don't pay attention to the outside. I don't pay attention to what other people are doing. I'm actually really not a super competitive person. My goals really are only to be better than myself, you know, to beat myself. That's really who my competition is. Mm. So I've found that when I don't think about, you know, other things or other people or activities that are going on that could interfere, I'm more able to stay focused on what I'm doing and only worry about what I need to do to move forward.
So you have a conversation with yourself.
I have a lot of conversations with myself.
Does it ever get nasty? Does it ever get nasty? Is there ever that inner voice that tells you to quit?
Oh yeah, that voice has been there. My bad attitude in myself. Yeah, it's, you know, I would not be honest if I was to tell you no. Yes, I've had that happen.
Yeah.
And to me that was like, I'm just mentally like, I need a break. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was a time when, you know, I stopped running for a while. I took almost a year off because mentally I wanted nothing to do with running at all. This was 2020 actually was the pandemic year, but, 2019, I just finished, you know, a multi-day race. And then I went ahead and I did this 100-mile I shouldn't have really done because I wasn't mentally, my head wasn't right. And it was not a good race for me. And I couldn't see the good in it. All I kept seeing was the bad. So my attitude was not good, you know, so I had to do a self check. So.
And you did, and you gave yourself a break.
I did. And I had not done that ever. So I took a long break and I didn't want to, and I didn't make myself anymore. And so I think after taking the break, I've come to realize this year that I'm in a much better place. My head is straight. I can, you know, focus on what I need to do, what I want to do, and be okay with it and just be kinder to myself.
Yes.
Instead of beating myself up a lot, but, you know, I run very intuitively. You know, this is my best. This is what I'm going to do today. You know, and I push myself when I need to, but I don't ever beat myself up anymore and stop doing that.
Good.
It's not healthy. Not healthy. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Jan, you were going to ask something. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. I've had some audio issues. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Well, and so you've taken a break now, Sandy. Do you have plans on what's next?
Yeah, I've kind of got my eye on I'm really loving the multi-day stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be kind of, you know, something I'm going to focus on for the next couple of years, try and, you know, see what I can do is get my miles up, and you know, set some goals for myself. I'd like to go to Hungary next year and have a 6-day event over there and see what I can do with that. Yeah.
I saw on Ultra Sign Up, you had a few 6-day races in there. Is that what you mean when you say multi-day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's no joke.
Yeah.
They're running what? They're running vacations. That's what they told us. That's what the brochure said.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to run for 6 days with no sleep?
Exactly.
On a track. That's fun.
Talking about tracks? Or are you talking about stage races?
Oh, track. This one was a track.
Oh goodness gracious. Talk about mental game. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
For something like that or the USA run, do you do things to distract yourself? Do you listen to music, other things?
Good question. I do listen to music. I always have. And I'll just put one earpiece in my ear and I listen to all kinds of genres. I've been asked, well, what do you listen to? Like, can you share your playlist? I'm like, not if you're going to judge me, I'm not going to share my playlist. Because I've got all kinds of music, but I usually try and set it to like a certain type of cadence. Just it allows me to kind of zone out. So I'll listen to music and then usually I just do problem solving, thinking about things, and then time just passes by. And I don't know if it's just a weird, uncanny gift, but I can actually just get lost for several hours at a time.
That's good when you have 6 days to go.
Several hours
is a chunk is probably important.
Right?
Some people try to distract themselves from the pain or the boredom or the whatever, and other people say that they try to embrace the pain. Do you have a philosophy or a way that you approach it?
I don't know. I guess to me, the music and the deep thought is the distraction. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, I don't get bored. It's not boring for me. I don't know. I know it sounds really weird, like really bizarre. And, you know, people think that
it doesn't sound weird nuts. To me, but it sounds weird to Sam and almost everybody else. So,
right. It was like, you know, 1,500 and something loops on this track.
I was 300 miles.
422. Cause the track wasn't a typical track. It was like the Pettit Ice Center in Wisconsin. So they put the track over the ice around the ice in the middle. So it was like a 0.43. So it's more oval shaped. So the laps were a little bit longer. So
did you reverse them?
0.44. Every 4 hours we switched.
Okay.
I know, right? Yeah. We switched. And for me, it's just, I don't know, just if you're not thinking too much about it, the time goes by fast and I actually enjoy it. The longer I can go and keep the same pace, it's just like a huge, like it feels good. I don't know if that sounds crazy, but
no, it makes sense because the body chemistry. Yeah, what's going on in your body chemistry? It makes perfect sense. But it's just interesting to think about the amount of mental strength and emotional strength that is required. The physical strength is kind of obvious, and we all sort of look towards that first as being a thing for ultra running or ultra, you know, adventure and all of that kind of stuff. People think of the physical body aspect, you know, quite readily. But I think they underestimate and explore the depths of the mental and emotional aspect. And you're just, you know, that to me seems to be your superpower at this point. And I'm so curious how you've developed that and how you continue to, nurture it and cultivate it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know.
Were you just born this way? Sandy, were you just born this way?
I don't know. I mean, I think as a child growing up, I think when I did things like on my own, like whether it was like reading a book, like I was very content and I would just be involved in that. And so I guess maybe it's the behavior I've always had in different, you know, I was displayed differently. You know, I didn't realize I could be so content and just time would pass. But I mean, I guess when I think about it, cause I never really thought about it till you asked me that. I mean, I guess maybe I was born this way. I've always been that way. I didn't really realize it until it's kind of showcased differently, you know, in this type of sport where it stands out a little bit more.
It's such a strength, you know, and also being alone and being willing to be with yourself, by yourself, in your thoughts, you know, in your emotions. Shan and I are having this fascinating, you know, human experiment where we're completely alone, isolated from one another, but also from the world. We can't leave our rooms and all that kind of stuff. And so it's been interesting. And thank goodness we're all ultra runners. Because we've already developed this skill set of being comfortable with ourselves, you know, for long periods of time in the outdoors and all that kind of thing. But I think I'm curious what your thoughts are with the pandemic. You know, you took that year off of grace for yourself, which I totally applaud. I think that's phenomenal. And more people need to, you know, be kind to themselves like that. But we're coming slowly out of this pandemic experience where, you know, life was put on pause for most of us. And in terms of your own thoughts and mental and emotional experience, what would you advise people who are out in the world who are still struggling mentally and emotionally to bring themselves out of this dark time?
I mean, I guess, you know, the advice I would give is kind of what I gave myself, and it was just to be okay with, you know, at first just I wasn't doing much and I didn't want to force myself to do something I didn't want to do. But that I had to do something. So it's, you need to find something that you're okay with that you can do. And it doesn't have to be running. It can be working in your garden. It could be, you know, starting a book. It could be, you know, writing a blog. It could be whatever, but you need to find something that you look forward to that's going to be comforting to help you, you know, have some way to release. It can be anything. And I did a lot of time I spent with my grandkids during the pandemic because we were in the same little bubble together. So I nurtured myself with them and, you know, I would take them outside and we would play and I would spend time with them. Because I had no desire to run and I wasn't going to force, but I enjoy doing that. I enjoy taking them outside. I enjoy spending the time with them, going to the park. And then so slowly, like I started to be a little bit more like, I think I'm going to go for a little run today. And it was like, okay, a couple miles around the block. You know, I mean, it was very small and it was when I felt like it and it was only as far as I wanted. And that's, I was okay with that. Like I knew I was okay with that instead of it. Has to be at least 10 standard. It has to be. I stopped doing that and I just let it be what it wanted to be until I was like, I want to run. Like, I was like, all of a sudden, the passion was just there again. I was hungry for it again. And it wasn't even like because I had something in mind I wanted to do. I just wanted to run. You kind of just have to let it evolve on its own, but you have to have something that gives you peace and something to release and enjoy. And to be kind to yourself and not to beat yourself up because you're struggling. And, you know, I've been there. I went through that. You know, lots of people are going through that, you know, and when you're not exercising a lot, you know, it's hard to, you know, keep a healthy lifestyle and weight sometimes. And that's a challenge. But, you know, I think once you start to, you know, be okay with what you're doing, that thirst or hunger to do more is going to come on its own. And then it's going to be more, you know, easy to have a habit again and start back up, just to be patient and kind to yourself.
Yes.
You were able to identify that you needed to take a break. I think a lot of people, especially in our sport, sometimes struggle with that. And we hear about people that overtrain and, you know, get themselves into a rut or injury. Do you have any idea of what, how were you able to tell that you needed to take that break?
Yeah. So it was in 2019, I had done a multi-day race that I really wanted to do. But the whole time I was there, this first time that I did that race, I was mentally like miserable. Like I couldn't stay focused was the thing. And I just wanted it to be over. And at the time I had an injury that was the tendonitis was really bad. I couldn't deal with the pain physically. So it was my excuse. So basically I struggled through that race and I finished and I still, you know, was happy that I finished it, but mentally I wasn't right. And so a month later, I went and I did another 100-mile race, which I had no business doing. A, because my injury hadn't healed, and B, because mentally I knew my head wasn't right. So I went into the race and it was just horrific from the beginning. I'll just tell you, I got lost several times. It was, and then so every time something went wrong, the wheels kept falling off in my head. It took me probably 12 hours longer than it would have, you know, on a regular, you know, 100-mile road race that I would have done. So for me, mentally, that was like the worst race I'd ever had. And I couldn't even be happy with the fact that at least I finished it. And that was a huge mental check for me. I'm like, I didn't want to run. I didn't want to run anymore. I wanted nothing to do with the sport. I hated it. You know, I thought I was horrible. I thought I was a bad athlete. I sucked. I shouldn't be running. I got no business running. So my head wasn't right. And I knew that. And so at that point, I was just like, I'm not going to run. My husband was like, don't run. If you don't want to run, don't run. Nobody's going to make you. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. So then it was just this mental thing I went through probably for about 3 months. Like, I should be running, but I don't want to. I should be running, but I don't want to. And so I think I tried to force myself to, you know, probably for another month or so before I finally was just like done. But then after that, it was just that I knew I wasn't right, because that's not normally how I would be. That's not me. You know, I'm always, you know, always positive and always like, okay, you know, something's happened, but this is what I can do now. Like, I'm still want to finish, you know. For me to not want to finish, I knew that was something was wrong. For me to want to quit a race, that's something wrong in my head. So I just, for me, that was a huge wake up call.
That's great. That's really good advice. I think there's a lot of us that, you know, we need that motivation to get going. And then there's other, some of us too. And I think I'm in this camp where I'll keep going to my own detriment. So knowing when you need that kick in the pants and knowing when you need to take that break or skills that I think anybody could use. So it's great to hear from somebody that's, you know, had the success you have.
And either one of those scenarios requires so much self-awareness and self-love. Right. So just the awareness of, do I need to get off the sofa? Is this really, you know, am I not being kind to myself by not doing what I need to do to take care of my mind, body, et cetera, you know, to be my best self? Or do I need to stop what I'm doing, whatever the behavior is, the awareness that's required in the self-love. So, good job, lady. And that's the kind of role modeling we need, not only in the sport, but honestly in the world. You know, you've got your family, you've got your grandchildren, you've got your extended running community. So thanks for being that kind of role model that we need. Shan's paying attention. He's sort of sat up straight. So Shan's right above me in this hotel. And we both have treadmills, of course, because we are training for a big ass race, right? So we have all the things
so
to do.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious to be training like this for 14 days in a hotel room. But anyway. So I know how much running Shan was.
That's a mental toughness right there, by the way. I just want to say, in your room, dude, on your treadmill, like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
It's not awesome.
We got the treadmills and we were just like lighting the rooms on fire and texting each other and all, like, and then it'd be like day five and then six. We're like, so we had to come up with fun ways to, you know, support each other as teammates and support ourselves in this moment. Yeah. And it's been really interesting. Has it not, Shan?
Yeah.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine, but yeah, that's some very amazing stuff there, right there, you guys.
So you're up to
a year and a half.
Yes, it has. You're up to doing these either road or track multi-days, huh? That's kind of what you're looking towards for your next, you know, douse of shenanigans.
I mean, I don't know. I just, something about this last one that I did, like I said, and I was so pleased with the fact that this was the one that I hit. I went back to the same race, the one I told you about that was mentally, I didn't do well.
Okay.
I couldn't stay focused. So when I went back this year to do it, you know, I had trained differently. I had, you know, different goals, but I actually went by myself. I didn't have anybody there crewing me or supporting me. So it was all by myself, completely by myself. But I just went with the mindset of kind of what I was telling you, like, I'm going to focus on me. This is what I'm going to do. And if something happens, I'll deal with it. And I have to be okay with that. And so I was just really pleased. I had a PR. I actually took first place for the women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got, 22 extra miles I did from the first time. So, I mean, I was really, really pleased. And when I was done, I felt fantastic. Like I wanted to keep going. So So I was just really happy with the outcome because when I was done, I didn't feel like I hate this. And I was like, I want to do this again.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
So, I don't know. I pretty much anything I finished that's more than 50 miles, I hate it at least for a few hours, usually like a day or two, and then by the third day, I'm looking up the
ready to do it again, right? No, that's what I'm saying. That's how I know in my mental check too that like I'm in this so much in a better place than I was a while back. That it's just
So Sandy, are you writing a book?
I get asked that all the time because I've been working on it and I've got a mirage of different stories that I've written that portray different chapters, but I haven't finished anything.
I do plan to finish.
It is a long process because there's so many pieces and stories and things that, but my goal is to complete a book soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked to Marshall earlier in the week and about his process of finishing his, I think, his second book. It sounded like it pained him greatly to get through that whole process. So
7 years. I was like, what? Of course, he's got the patience of a saint. So 7 years for him is reasonable.
He does. Uncle Marsh. Love that guy.
So before we wrap up our conversation with you, this was really inspiring and beautiful. I'd like to ask you a question, Sandy. What does endurance mean to you?
I think endurance, what it means to me is what's in your heart and what you want to do, what you believe you can do, you can do. Endurance is about pushing beyond what's comfortable, going outside your zone and doing the things that seem scary, and just going for those dreams and goals.
Awesome. Awesome. Well said. Thank you. I know people want to find out about some of your stories along the way, Badwater and so forth. Where can they find you online or read more about you or connect you on social?
Yeah. So on Instagram, you can follow me at UltraGirl52.
Okay.
You can find me on Strava, Sandy Ann V. And on Facebook, same thing, Sandy Ann V. You can find me there. And I'm actually working on a website to launch soon because I've been training some folks on for ultra running distances. And I am coaching.
Oh, cool.
But to actually officially have a site where you can go and, see more things about me, and my daughter's helping me with that. So hopefully in the next month or two, we'll have that up and going.
Sweet. I might reach out to you. I'm going to do my first 240 next year. And I'm very into the multi-day thing. So that's so good to know.
Cool.
Because to be honest, it's hard to find female coaches in this space. Not that the men aren't great, but many of us prefer a female for a multitude of reasons. So sweet lady. That's so good. Okay. Awesome. Any last thoughts, Shan?
No, this has been great. And it's good to hear the physical accomplishments, but also how you've really managed to kind of figure yourself out over these past few years.
Yeah, it's been a journey in itself. So running across America definitely changed my life for sure. So
has a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
And the journey continues. Can't wait to see what you're up to next. We'll be following you closely.
Well, thank you again so much. I appreciate the time to share.
Thanks, Sandy. Good to see you both. Thanks for your time.
All right.
Have a great day, guys.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for connecting with us for this episode of the Endurance Town USA Project. Discover more about today's guest, along with other great stories and video projects, by visiting us online at EnduranceTownUSA.com. You can also follow us for updates and behind-the-scenes peeks at future episodes on Instagram at EnduranceTownUSA. You can also connect with our creator, host, and life leadership and business coach, Samantha Pruitt, at SamanthaPruitt.com or on Instagram at TheSamanthaPruitt. And lastly, you can follow me, Travis Ford, producer and marketing creative, at RockHarborMarketing.com or Instagram at RockHarborMarketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time we go on an adventure to Endurancetown, USA.
Bring it back.